We're holding on Kuf Mem Vov Omid Beis, three lines from the bottom. And we learned yesterday about the concept of Umdana, that when we said a Shchivmera wrote out a document giving all his nechasim to others, so if he didn't leave anything for himself, so if he left anything for himself, Matnase Kayemes, then the Matana is valid even if he recovers. But if he left over nothing for himself, then Ein Matnase Kayemes, then we say the Matana is not, if he recovers, then the Matana is not a Matana, because we can assume that he wouldn't have done that if he knew he was going to recover, because he wouldn't want to leave himself penniless. So the Gemara was discussing two different opinions of Tanoim, where we see that such an umdana works, and we said that our Tana, that the Tana of our Mishnah is one or the other of them. Either we had Reb Shimon ben Manasseh, or we had Reb Shimon ben Manasseh with a case where a person's son went away to Medina Sayyam, and he heard that the son had died. He wrote a document giving his nechasim to others, and then the son comes back. Reb Shimon ben Manasseh says that the matana is not a matana because he wouldn't have done it if he knew his son was still alive. And then we had Reb Shimon Shazuri about a person who's dangerously ill and says to write a get for his wife. So the Gemara says, Man tana laha de tana rabbanan. Which Tana then is it who is the Tana of the following Braisa? Hareshai cholo umuto b'mita. Suppose that the person was sick and lying in bed. V'omruloi, and people said to him, Nechasecha lami, who do you want to give your nechasin to? V'omulahen, and he says to them, Doimish yeshli ben. I thought that I had a son. Asher she'enli ben, now that it turns out I don't have a son, because as far as he knows, his son died. Nechosel Pliny, then I want my nechosim to go to Pliny, to somebody else. Another example, Hoya Cholo Mutobamita, again, if he was sick and lying in bed, the Omrla Nechosel Lami, people asked him, who do you want your nechosim to go to? Omrlahan, he says, Doma She'ishti Milberes, I had thought that my wife is pregnant, and therefore she will have the baby maybe after I'm gone, but then he'll yarshin my property. Akshav She'en Ishti Milberes Nechosel Pliny, and now that I find out that in fact she's not pregnant, then I want my nechosim to go to Pliny, whichever Pliny he chooses. The Nodesh Yeshle Ben, it turns out that he was mistaken. He does have a son after all. His son is alive. Osha Hoysa Ishtimul Beres, or in fact his wife is pregnant, and therefore there's a good chance that she'll give birth to a healthy baby. So then, Ein Matnase Matana. So then the Braisa says his Matana is not a Matana, and that other person doesn't get the Nechosim. So, Lamer of Shimon Menasseh, he v'loy Rabbanan. Would we have to say that this is only according to Reb Shimon Menasseh, and that the Chachamim would disagree with that? When we had the case yesterday, where his son had gone to Medina Sayyam, and he heard that his son had died and wrote out his nechosim to somebody else, and then the son comes home, the Tanakama says, Matnose Matona, the Matona is still a valid Matona because he didn't specify that he's doing it because his son is dead. Whereas Reb Shimon Menasseh had said, we apply umdana over there, and therefore we say he wouldn't have done that if he knew that his son was alive. Here he's saying sort of implicitly, but he's not explicitly saying, I'm giving this to you because I know my son is dead, etc. He's mentioning that fact, but still he's not making the matana depend on that. So does that mean only Reb Shimon Menasseh would say that it's not a valid matana? The answer is no, afilo teimer Rabbanan, because it's different. Even here, even the Chachamim, even the Rabbanan who disagree with Reb Shimon Menasseh would hold that this is different. Doime shiny, because it's different over here. At least he did mention the point that as far as I knew, I had a son, or as far as I knew, my wife is pregnant. So fine, he didn't make an explicit t'nai, but still, it's very clear from the flow of what he's saying that he means that if he had known that his son was alive, etc., then he wouldn't give this matana. So therefore, now when it turns out his son is alive, then in fact the matana is not a matana. So I'm going to ask, well, that's a very obvious distinction. Or the ka'orila, my ka'orila. So whoever brought up the question in the Beis Medrash, what was he even thinking to bring up the question in the first place? Isn't it very obvious that doime is different? And the answer is, because you could argue that maybe the Makshan thought that that after all, again, he's not actually making one thing depend on the other. Maybe it's just he's mentioning his tsar. He's not saying that the Matana is dependent on the fact that that his son is dead. He's saying, oy veiz mir, that I had a son and he died. And here I would have expected to have a son to Yarshin my Nechosim. Veizmir, I don't have one. He's mentioning his tsar when he's giving out his Nechosim. So maybe it's not a complete umdana. Maybe you would say that only Rav Shimon Menasya would consider that to be a valid umdana. So no, we're saying that it's not just he's mentioning his tsar in connection with it's time for him to give out his nechosim, and therefore he's remembering how, you know what, it's a pity I don't have a son. No, it means that he's actually making an implicit tnai over there, that he's doing this only on the understanding that his son is dead, and if it turns out that not, then it is a valid matana. So that was the point of bringing up the question in the first place, that we thought that maybe doime is not a strong enough reason to make it be considered an actual tnai, but we're saying in effect it is. Okay. The Gemara says, Omer Rav Zeira, Omer Rav, minayim matnas shchiv merah shehi min haTorah. Where do we see that the whole concept of a matnas shchiv merah is min haTorah, that it works even by just saying? As we go through the perek, that you actually have two possibilities. First of all, you have what we talked about in our Mishnah, where a Shchiv Merah gives out all of his nechosim and doesn't leave anything for himself. So that kind of thing works even without a kinyan, without writing or anything like that. Another point that Rashbam mentions is later on in the perek, you're going to have even if he gives out only some of his nechosim, then again, if he ends up dying of that illness, then also those gifts are all valid and irrevocable. So where do we know that concept? That it's min haTorah? Now, when we're saying min haTorah over here, Tosfos points out doesn't really mean min haTorah. Here Rav Nachman is going to give us a source and a pasuk for it, but then on Amud Beis, Rav Nachman himself is going to be saying, Rav is going to be quoting from him on Amud Beis, and he's going to be saying that it's not really min haTorah. So Tosfos explains what we mean is over here, an asmachta. So the Amoraim are going to be arguing over here which pasuk is used for the asmachta. With that said, though, Marsha further on in the Gemara explains that there are two different understandings of what Rav Nachman is saying. Here, the Gemara is going to quote Rav Nachman as bringing a pasuk for it, and therefore the Gemara is understanding that here it actually means daraisa. But then later on, when the Gemara says at the top of Amud Beis, the Gemara says the Rava Omar, Rava says that Rav Nachman said, and that kind of lashon, the Rava Omar, implies that he's arguing with what came before. So then there would be two different understandings. According to the understanding of the Gemara here, it would mean Rav Nachman at least holds that it really is daraisa, and maybe then also Rav Zeira Omar Rav is also going to, because they're both going to be bringing psukim for it. Whereas later on, Rava is saying that no, it's only Dirabbanan. So where do we know that Matnas Shchiv Merah is min haTorah? So again, whether we mean actually min haTorah or not, according to Marashah, yes, at least the Amoraim over here are going to hold that it's min haTorah. According to Tosfos, we're talking strictly Dirabbanan, and we're talking about an asmachta. By the way, when we talk about an asmachta in general, So you have an interesting idea that the Ritva mentions in Masecht Rosh Hashanah, that an asmachta is not stam the chachamim, just they made up a takana and then they found some pasuk that hints that helps us remember what they're saying. No, we show them we learn that way, but the Ritva says actually, whenever you have something that the Gemara says an asmachta, means this is a din which Hashem wanted to have enacted, but for whatever reason, for reasons that Hashem only knows, he decided not to make it part of the Torah, but rather to leave it up to the Chachamim to be gozer it, or to be misakin it. But Hashem put that pasuk in the Torah, or wherever it is where the pasuk is, in Nach, in order for the Chachamim to use as a basis for their takana. So in other words, according to that, the takana is dirabbanan, but it reflects what Hashem wanted all along, and therefore the pasuk is there for that. Because here the Gemara is going to be bringing two different psukim for this, or a few different psukim to show this concept of matnas shchivra, and the Gemara is going to explain why each one of the Amoraim doesn't agree with the other ones. If it was just Sam, a way to remember the takana, then there's no particular reason why we should care what each one does with the other one's pasuk. It's only a handy way of remembering it anyway. But if you say, like the Maharsha, that the opinions here hold that it's actually Daraisa, or if you say, like the Ritva, it is Drabbanan, but nevertheless it's reflecting what Hashem intended all along, then it's important to know which pasuk is, which pasuk it comes from. Anyway, so Rav Zera says, Shenemar, the pasuk says, V'havartim es nachlosa levito. The pasuk says that you should if a person dies without sons, then he should pass over his nachla to his daughters. To his daughter, which implies yesh l'cha ha'avara acheres shikazu, implying that in this case, so the Rashbam discusses what exactly is extra in the pasuk that we can learn from. First, the Rashbam says the word v'havartem is extra. It could have just said, if a person dies and he doesn't have a son, nachlose levitter, then his nachla goes to his daughter. So the whole word v'havartem is extra. Then the Rashbam brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that we're learning from the word es, but the Rashbam explains that doesn't work with the continuation of the Gemara. And then there's yet another explanation that Rashbam brings that the reason is because instead of v'havartem, it should have said unisatem. You should give like it does by the rest of the Yoshim in that section. But again, the Rashbam doesn't really like that. The Rashbam doesn't really like that as well. So the correct understanding says the Rashbam is the fact that the entire word is extra. Not that it could have used a different word, and not that it uses the word es, but the very fact that it says v'havartem at all, where it could have just said ishki yomos, a man dies, uvein ein lo, he doesn't have a son, nachlosa levitter, then his nachla goes to his daughter. So we learn from that, yesh l'cha ha'avara acheres shikazu. That implies that there's another kind of passing along, which is like that, where it works without a kinyan. Now, obviously, when a person's daughter inherits from him, there's no kinyan involved. He dies, and he doesn't have any sons, so his daughter is automatically yashin him. So the pasuk is implying with the word v'havartem that there's another kind of case where it's possible to transfer nachla from somebody without a kinyan, the ezu, and what would that be? Zumat nashri. Namely a matnas shchivmanah, which takes place without any kinyan and without any writing or anything. So that's Rav Zera Omer Rav. Rav Nachman Omer Rav Bavua Mechocha. Rav Nachman, on the other hand, quotes Rav Bavua as saying you have a different pasuk. The pasuk continues in that same section, Unasatim es nachlosa l'echol, where the pasuk continues that if he doesn't have any sons or daughters or descendants of the sons and daughters, then you give the nachla to his brothers. And again, the word unasatem is extra. Yesh l'chon nesina acheres shikazu. So you have another kind of giving nachla, which is like that. Because again, the Poli Rashbam explains. Because again, the pasuk could have just said v'im ein loy bas nachlosei la'echol. So that means there's another kind of giving which is like that, which we learn from the word unasatem. The ezu, what is that? Zumat nashchimra. Okay, the Gemara asks, Rav Nachman, my time, I omer mi v'havartem. Now, why isn't Rav Nachman learning from v'havartem like Rav Zera does in the name of Rav? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that limud? And here is also where this is a. So if you say, again, if you say that the whole concept is Daraisa, then of course we need to know which pasuk it comes from. Even if we say it's Drabbanan, but it's an Asmachta, as Tosfos says, we still find sometimes when it comes to something which is clearly Midrabbanan and where there's only Asmachtas, the Gemara is still bothered by what does each one do with the other one's pasuk and try to resolve it. So why doesn't Rav Nachman learn the Asmachta from V'havartem? The answer is Ahum Reboiler, the Chidur Rebbe, because he says that you need the word v'havartem to teach us what Rebbe says. The Tanya, Rebbe Omer, b'kula nemen behen nesina, by all the other people who would inherit from him, you have a son, a daughter, a brother. We have the whole sequence in the previous parak. So each one, the Torah says, And b'chol ha'nem b'hem nesina, by each one of them it says that you should give it to them. U'nesatim esnachalos el echad, you should give it to his brothers. U'nesatim esnachalos el achei ovid, you should give it to his father's brothers, etc. V'kan nemra ha'avara, whereas by a daughter yarshining, instead it uses ha'avara, because we learn from that, ein l'chosh, ein l'chom, shemavr nachla, m'shevet l'shevet el abas, because the only one who's able to cause that nachla should be transferred from one shevet to another, is only a daughter, because her sons or her husband, who may well be from another shevet, are going to yarshin from her. We learned this in the previous parak. We talked about, we have the whole discussion over there, whether a wife yarshins her husband, whether a husband yarshins his wife minatora or not. So this is one of the points that we brought up over there, is that the pasuk is implying that as a result of a daughter marrying a man from another shevet, then her husband is going to inherit her. So that was one of the sources for the idea that the husband inheriting his wife is minat Torah. The point being, that's why it says v'havartem, to imply that point that nachla gets transferred from one shevet to another only in that case. And from there, in fact, we learn that a husband yarshes his wife, and then a son yarshes his mother. So that's why we need the word v'havartem for that. So whereas with all the other ones, not, because his brothers are going to be from the same shevet, his father's brothers are going to be from the same shevet, etc. So that's why Rav Nachman does not want to learn from v'havartem, because he needs that for that drasha, and therefore he learns from unasatim. All right, but Abzeda, my time of the omamir unasatim. Why doesn't Abzeda want to learn from the word unasatim? Because he says urcha dekrahu, because that's a normal way for the pasuk to speak. That's just yes, it could have said im ein loy bas nachlose laechav veim ein loy achim nachlose laechav. But it's an unusual way to say it. It's more likely that the Torah is just writing on a satim, because that's the style. If he doesn't have such and such a relative, then you give it to such and such other relative. So there's nothing that special that we're supposed to learn from the word on a satim, and therefore you can't say that it's a basis for the din, whether you say that the din is daraisa or whether you say that it's a, or whether you say that it's an asmachta. So the Gemara continues. So far we have two psukim from Chumash to talk about that indicate this idea of Tzavoas Shchina. So now the Gemara is going to bring a couple of psukim from Nevi'im that express the same point as well. Here also, if we say that it's Derabanan, then there's much more reason to say that we can be using psukim from Nevi'im for it, but even if it's Daraisa, once in a while we do have Dinim Daraisa that we learn from a pasuk in Nevi'im. Often the Gemara will say on that, that it's something that was Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, and then eventually the Navi wrote it down. So Rav Nashi about Yumi Omer Mehocha. Here is another pasuk that indicates this point about a person giving his last instructions before he passes away, and there's nothing mentioned in the pasuk about needing to write it or make a kinyan or anything like that. The pasuk says, "Vayomer mahem chol chizkiyahu lamus." During that time, Chizkiyahu was very sick and was about to pass away. This was during when Sancheiriv is besieging Yerushalayim and seems to be on the verge of conquering it. So at that point, also Chizkiyahu became very sick. Vayomer elav Yeshayahu and Omer Tanovi, and Yeshayah comes to him. Vayomer elav, and he tells him, "Koyamar Hashem, tzav leveischa." Hashem says, "You should command. You should give your last instructions to your household. He meis atav lo sichya, because you're going to die and you're not going to live," which means but savor ba'alma. So therefore, just the Hashem. So therefore, Yeshaya is telling him, just give commands. Meaning, in other words, and those whatever you say, and those commands will happen. He doesn't tell him anything about writing it or making a kinyan or anything like that, implying that would be enough. This is the famous thing, by the way, where in the Gemara Brachas, where Yeshaya tells him that you forfeited your Olam Hazeh and your Olam Haba because you haven't gotten married and have children, and Chizkiyahu explains that I saw with Ruach HaKodesh that my children are going to be Rishoyim, et cetera, and you have the whole story over there. The point is, though, that Yeshaya is using the expression Tzav Leveischa, Tzav Leveischa, implying that all you need to do is make a Tzavah and it'll happen. Rami Bar Yecheskel says you have another pasuk mehocha. You have another pasuk also in Nevi'im where we see only a tzavah. This is in connection with Achitofel. So Ahitophel had been an advisor of David's for many, a close advisor of David's for many years, and his advice was always reliable. The pasuk says asking Ahitophel was like asking the Urim b'Tumim. Then when Avshalom revolted against David, then Ahitophel joined him. And Mephoshim point out one reason Ahitophel had it in for David is because his own granddaughter was Bathsheba. So he was so he didn't like David over the whole affair involving Bathsheba. So therefore now he's looking always for a way to get back at David. And now when Avshalom revolted, then he joined him. To make a long story
short, he wasn't happy that his daughter married a king.
I mean, I guess in that sense, but on the other hand, I guess he figured that the fact is it happened in such an unusual way, a way that everybody is questioning it and thinking that it's illegal and so on and so forth. So I guess he didn't like it. I don't know. In any case, so eventually when Avshalom revolted, then Ahitophel joined him. To make a very long story short, Avshalom asked Ahitophel for advice. What's our next step over here? So Ahitophel gives advice of how to eliminate David very quickly, send a strike force and catch David when he's unaware, etc. The Pesukim describe that Avshalom then asked advice also from somebody else, Hushai Ha'arki. This Hushai was actually secretly working on David's behalf, although they didn't know that. Anyway, Hushai gives them a different piece of advice that, no, you have to get the whole army together and defeat David in detail. It was a very unwieldy suggestion. Logically, Ahitophel's suggestion was a much better one, but they ended up accepting Hushai's advice. The pasuk says that Hashem specially intervened over there to cause them to accept Hushai's advice, even though in reality it wasn't very good for Avshalom, rather than the other way around. Anyway, so the pasuk says, "Ahitophel raw kilo nesatzosay." Ahitophel saw that his advice had not been done, and he realized, therefore, without that, if they're going to do what Hushai said, they're going to end up losing the whole war. And then whoever was on Avshalom's side is going to be judged as a murder of a malchus. So he didn't want that. So vayachvesh es hachamor. So he saddled his donkey. Vayelech al beisay el ira. He went to his house, to his city. Vayitzav al beisay. He gave his last instructions to his family. Vayechonak, and then he strangled himself. Pasha committed suicide. So the point is, again, b'tzavah ba'alma, we see he just gave a tzavah. Vayitzav al beisay. Again, doesn't say anything about writing or kinyan or anything like that. Again, indicating that you have now, he was not a shimra per se, but still, it's the same kind of thing. He's about to die. In fact, the Rosh points out, you see that, the same way as we learned yesterday, you have a case of a person who is being taken out in chains to be executed, that we said, if he says, write a get for my wife, even though he didn't say give the get, then nevertheless we give it. So the Rosh says we have the same kind of thing over here, where he's about to die, even though it's not from natural causes, then the same rule applies, and he has the din of a shivmana, and his last wishes have to be carried out. So again, the tzavah ba'alma, just the tzavah alone, is enough for that. Having mentioned what happened with Avshalom, so now the Gemara digresses to talk about what exactly were his instructions. Now, Bepashtus, of course, his instructions would have included what to do with all of his nechosim. That we're not focusing on. But the Gemara's understanding, the Gemara knew also, rather, the Rashbam says, Hochi habakim lahu, the Chachamim knew that Avshalom gave further instructions to his family. Sometimes you have, by the way, you often find in Jewish history, you find great G'dayli Yisrael. Sometimes you even find simple people who, besides they would give a will that would say what's going to be the disposition of their nechosim after they pass away, they would also write a tzavah, a ruchnistik, a tzavah, to tell their children, to encourage their children in Torah and Avodah and the various other things that a Yid has to do between himself and the Eibishter and between themselves and each other. There are ones like that have been published from various G'dayli Yisrael. So here the Gemara is going to tell about Ahitophel gave such a tzavah as well. Ahitophel, before he died, he told his children three instructions. First of all, he says, "Al tiyu b'machloikas." Don't be in machloikas. Which means, in other words, don't get involved in machloikas. And of course, Ahitophel himself had been involved in machloikas in this whole rebellion of Avshalom against David. Don't rebel against the royal dynasty of David, because, in other words, you see, Achitophel himself tried that, and it didn't work out so well for him. And the third one, the Yomtiv, Shalatzeres Borur, if the Yomtiv of Shavuos, if it's clear weather, no clouds, Ziru Chitim, then you plant wheat. In other words, then you know it's a good simon that you should, that after Yomtiv, you should plant wheat, and the wheat crop will be successful. Now, what's going on with these three things? So first of all, Maharal Shor says the Al Tiyub Machloikus. What do you mean, Al Tiyub Machloikus? Just say Al Tachloiku. Don't store a Machloikus. Because he's saying sometimes you have to be involved in it. Sometimes there has to be a Machloikus. Sometimes, for example, somebody treated you badly, then you have to do something about it. You can't just turn the other cheek like the goyim say. You have to assert your rights. But he's saying, "Al tiyu, don't be the ones who start a machloikas out of nowhere." The Al tiyu du malchus beis David is not only that we see, as Rashbam says, that he tried to rebel against malchus beis David and it didn't work out very well for him. But the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, we're going to get to it in a few months, Bez Hashem, that he actually had seen a vision that made him think that the future. And in the future, he himself is going to be the king. So now he saw that. That's not going to be. So don't try to fight against Malchus Beis David. When Shavuos is clear weather, so clear weather b'chol helps you learn better. When it's not cloudy and it's nice clear weather, then you're able to learn better. So Shavuos, which is the day of Kabbalah Satorah, and when you have good weather like that, then it means plant wheat, because wheat gives a person das, as the Gemara mentions in various places, that a, for example, a child doesn't even know how to talk until he starts eating wheat, until he starts eating grain. So those are the things he's giving instructions to his children. There's a couple of fascinating letters from the Rebbe in Igros Kodesh Chelek Gimel from Shavuos Tufshin Tes. This is the Shavuos before the Friedrich Rebbe's Estalkus. The Rebbe was at the our Rebbe was at that time still the Ramash, and he was in charge of Kohos and various other things. So in that capacity, he was sending out there would be a kuntres of Maimorim and Sichus from the Friedrich Rebbe that would come out, and the Rebbe would send it to various people, and often he would include a letter with it talking about something, some topic related to the Maimorim and Sichus. So here, the Rebbe gave two letters at that time explaining, well, one of them explains directly this thing with Achitofel's Tzava, and the other one actually has to do more with the continuation of the Gemara. So he explains that, it's like this. We know the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos Shlosh Ksarim Heim, there are three crowns that a person might achieve: the crown Keser Torah, Keser Kohuna, and Keser Malchus, and they have Keser Shemtov Ola Agabehem. So he says these three things reflect. Now Achitofel was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, as the Gemara mentions in various places. We know in Pirkei Avos he even taught David two halachas. But now at the end of his life, he realizes, looking back at what he had done, he hadn't lived right. And in the end, the Gemara tells us over there in Sanhedrin, he lost his place in Ol Hamavah because one thing is, he lacked Kabbalah's oil. He figured that learning Torah is all about the logic, all about the seichel of it. So now his final instructions are to be careful with the Kabbalah's oil with each of these three ksarim. So he says like this, when it comes to Al Tiyub HaMachloikas, the prototype of a Machloikas that we have in Jewish history is Korach's Machloikas on Moshe, that he wanted to be Kohen Gadol. Now, there were good logical reasons behind Korach's demand. Nonetheless, though, we have Kabbalah's oil to know that the Eibishter chose that the Eibishter chose Aaron and not anybody else. So, therefore, so that's the first thing. Al Tiyub HaMachloikas, don't try to be like Korach, grabbing the Keser Kohuna with logic. Realize you have to have Kabbalah's oil for Hashem. The second one, he says, Al Tiyub HaMalchus Beis David refers to Keser Malchus. Again, there could be good logical reasons why to say that David didn't deserve the kingship. You think about it, for example, Shaul had done only minor things and he had lost the kingship because of it. David had done much more major things, including the whole thing with Uriah and Bathsheba, and yet he didn't lose the kingship for that. So logically, you could say that David doesn't deserve it, but nonetheless, you have to have Kabbalah's oil that he does. In fact, David himself was an example of Kabbalah's oil. The Gemara says on him that Hakim Ola Shal Torah and Ola Shal Truva. He established the yoke of Torah and the yoke of Truva that David showed how to serve the Eibishter with Kabbalah's oil and to do Truva with Kabbalah's oil. So that's the second thing. And as far as planting wheat when Shavuos is clear weather, So that represents, after all, what was accomplished by Mont and Turda. The Turda itself, we had before that. We know that the Orbis learned and kept the Turda, for example. So it means because we, at Mont and Turda, we received the Turda as that we now we have an oil. We have a yoke of Turda. We have Hashem gave it to us and we keep it no matter what. So that kind of thing was introduced on Mont and Turda. So therefore, when it comes to, when you see that the weather is good on when you see that the weather is good on Shavuos, representing that that you have this you have this connection with Hashem through Matan Torah, then plant wheat, and then it's time to have the das that's indicated by wheat. So it comes out, therefore, that all three of these instructions of his are based on the idea. Don't think that your human logic is all of where it's at. That's the mistake that I made throughout my life. Instead, realize that it's all about Kabbalah's oil to the Eibishter in all of these three areas of life. So now the Gemara continues. Now, so we said
with regard to Olam Haba, he lost because he killed himself, right?
Well, that kind of factors into it, but the Gemara mentions other points over there. It's mainly because he fought against David. The fact that he killed himself is a factor, but that's not really the main thing. In particular, actually, the Rebbe explains in that letter by Matan Torah, the Chiddush was Nasa v'Nishma, that we accepted Oil Malchus Shemayim v'Shleimus. So that's the connection over here with Shavuos and wheat. So now the third piece of advice from Achitofel had been that if Shavuos is Barur, which means clear, Ziru Chitim, then plant wheat. So the Gemara brings another version of that, Mazutra Amma Bolul Itmar. Mazutra says the word is not Borur, clear, as in clear without clouds, but rather that the third piece of advice from Achitofel is that if Shavuos is Bolul, if it's cloudy, then it's time to plant wheat afterwards. Amri Nahadoi, but the Chachamim of Nahadoi said, Mishmei de Rav Yaakov, in the name of Rav Yaakov, it's actually a little bit of both. Loi Borur, Borur Mamish, Loi Bolul, Bolul Mamish. It doesn't actually mean completely clear, and it doesn't mean completely cloudy. What it actually means is Ela Afilu Bolul Veruach Tzvonis Menashavdoi. If you have it's cloudy, and bolul literally means mixed, so like the sky is mixed with clear and clouds. But the Ruach Tzvonis Menashavdoi, but the north wind clears away the clouds. The Gemara mentions in various places that the north wind is a wind that clears away the clouds and brings clear weather. Zehu Borur, then that's considered Borur. So therefore, so Achitofel's third piece of advice to his children, according to that, was it doesn't have to be clear weather, it can be cloudy weather as long as afterwards a Ruach Tzvonis comes and clears it. So here you have another letter from the Rebbe at that time, right before Shavuos Tashin Tes, where the Rebbe explains like this. Again, wheat represents wheat. So first of all, we said before, wheat represents das because again, a child doesn't learn how to doesn't even learn how to say tati or mommy until he eats grain. But in addition, also we have the whole point that's brought in many places in Chassidus that barley is Michael Behema and wheat is Michael Adam, and therefore during Sfira we start with barley at the beginning, the Korban Omer, and then over time we're supposed to refine ourselves during Sfira and graduate to the level of Adam where we have wheat. So therefore, now the question is, under what circumstances will that avoda best take place? So if you say that, now you can say like this, the Torah comes milamayla. But the purpose of the Torah is to do avoda sabirurim down here on earth, we who have a yetzahara. So first the Gemara brings that when Shavuos is clear weather, which that implies that you have a complete unobstructed hashpa milamayla, Then it's a time to plant wheat. Meaning, in other words, that's the time when your avoda of transforming yourself from an animal into a person is going to be the most effective. Then mavzutra, on the other hand, the word zutra means small. So that represents the level of that represents the level where we have to do our small kind of avoda relative to the Eibishter. We have to go and analyze the Torah. And we learned a couple of weeks ago, a dove cut and havayas da abaya v'rava, that the Gemara had called all of the analyses of abaya and rava that make up the Gemara. The Gemara had called them dove cut, a small thing relative to ma'isim erkava. So ma'zutra represents the avoda that we do from down here. So therefore, he says, on the contrary, the best kind of avoda is when it's bolol. You don't see the sun representing of course that clearly, and nevertheless, you do your avoda, and that's the best kind of thing for what Torah is supposed to accomplish in transforming you. Then the Nahardo, you say, and the Nahardo was the center of Jewish life in Babel. It was the place, there was a shul, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, there was a shul in Nahardo where the Shina would rest. The Gemara also mentions that Nahardo is located on a river called Nahar Malka, which means the king's river. So they're speaking, so to speak, in the name of Hashem, and the Mishnei of Yaakov, where Yaakov represents the Yud of Chochmah that comes all the way down to Okev, to the heel, that they say it's both. Even if you start out with Bolo, you start out with a mixed up kind of place, you have Tov V'ra mixed, that it is down here on earth, but then you have a higher gilui milamaila, then that will be, and that clears away the clouds, then that will be borer, then that will be the kind of weather where now you plant your wheat and you'll be successful in your avoda for the next year. So in other words, three different perspectives on where what the best kind of avoda is, where it's completely milamaila, where it's completely milamata, or the nahardo, you're saying you start with milamata and then you revoke with that, it's sarusa de lasata, and then you revoke with that, and it's sarusa de laela that clears the clouds and makes your avoda successful. So the Gemara continues, Amalei Rav Abba l'Rav Ashi. So now Rav Abba says to Rav Ashi, this statement from the Nahardoi about Borer versus Bolo. So Rav Abba says to Rav Ashi, you Chachamim and Bavel are learning that has to do with Achitofel's advice. Anan, we, from Eretz Yisrael, where Rav Abba was, Ad Rav Yitzchok bar Avdini Masninimlo. We learn that difference between Borer and Bolo actually in connection with something that Rav Yitzchok bar Avdini said. The Amr Rabbi Yitzchok bar Avdini, Motzoi Yom Tov Ha'achan Shel Chag, on the day after the last day of Sukkot. So that is to say, on the night after Shemini Atzeres, B'chag Nidonin Al Amoyim, as we know, the Eibishter judges the world about its supply of water, of rain, on Sukkot, and Shemini Atzeres is the end of that period, which is why we start davening for rain on Shemini Atzeres. So on the night after that, in the time of the Beis Mikdash, Hakol Sofen La'ashanam Arocha. Everybody would be gazing towards the smoke, towards the column of smoke that came up from the Mizbeach, that came out from the Marocha, from the wood pile on the Mizbeach. Marsha points out that in particular on the night after Shemini Atzeres, there's the fats and pieces from the Korbanos from throughout Yom Tov that are being burnt, and therefore you have an extra large column of smoke. So everybody would be looking to see which way that column is leaning. Not the clap. Now the Mishnah mentions in Pirkei Avos that the wind never dispersed the smoke from the Mizbeach. That was one of the ten nisim in the Beis Mikdash. So the Gemara in Yoma explains that Tosfos refers to it over here that the nes was that the column of smoke wouldn't disperse because of the wind, but nevertheless, as the Gemara is saying over here, the wind would cause it to tilt one way or the other, like a tree almost, like a tree swaying in the wind. So therefore, they would look at that, they would see which direction the wind is blowing from, and that would give them a weather forecast for the coming year. So not to clap itself, and if they see that the column of smoke is leaning towards the north, which means that the wind is blowing from the south, anim smechim or balabatim atzevim. The poor people would be happy, and the balabatim, who have a lot of grain to sell, would be sad, because in such a year when there's a, it means that during the coming year, the south wind is going to be very predominant, and that means there's going to be a lot of rain that year, and therefore, Paris Mount Kivin, so therefore, any stored produce is going to rot. So the result is, in other words, the poor people are happy because it means that the rich people, the landowners, are going to have to sell their grain very quickly because if they keep it, it's going to be too humid and it's going to rot. So therefore, the poor people are going to be happy. The coming year, prices are going to be low. The rich people are now the bottom are not going to be so happy because it means they're going to have to sell their grain quickly and they're not going to get very good prices for it. Not the klapid dorim. If the column of smoke is leaning towards the south, so then it's the other way around. Then it means the wind is blowing from the north. And as we said, the wind from the north usually clears the clouds away. So then it's the other way around. Aniyim atzevim balabatim smechim. The poor people would be sad, and the balabatim would be happy. If they should gish mishonim water, it means there's going to be relatively little rain that year, or peiros mishtamrin, and therefore the peiros will be preserved. We don't mean, in other words, that there's going to be a complete drought, but in other words, there's not going to be so much rain. It'll be basically be a dry, it will be mostly be dry weather, so there'll be enough rain for the crops to grow, but not enough to cause them to rot. So therefore, the balabatim are going to be able to hoard their grain and be able to sell it at higher prices. Not a klap in Mizrach. If the column of smoke leans towards the east, hakos mechin, then everybody would be happy. Because then, when there's a west wind coming, then it means that there's going to be a decent amount of rain, but not enough to cause anything to rot. So therefore, that would be the best kind of weather for the coming year. So it's a gentle wind that comes from the west. So therefore, there'll be enough rain to make the crops good, to make the crops grow plentiful, but not enough to make it rot. So actually, what it'll be is it won't be like in a north wind year where they can keep the grain for a very long time, but on the other hand, it won't rot quite so quickly either. So therefore, everybody's happy because that comes out a very balanced year. Klapi Meira, if the smoke tilts towards the west, Hakolat Sevin, then everybody would be upset because the east wind causes drought. So then you have an actual drought, and you're really going to have shortages. Here the Rashbam says that the east wind prevents the rain from coming and it causes a drought. Rashi in Yuma, this Gemara is also in Yuma, mentions also that the east wind is a very harsh wind and it causes the seeds to dry up. Tosfos also points out, also though, based on other Gemaras, that sure, the east wind does bring rain, but it actually, on the contrary, the east wind not only brings rain, it brings too much of it, and therefore there are floods. So in any case, therefore, I call it saving. Marshall points out, by the way, it's not like necessarily, obviously, if the wind is blowing and smoke is leaning one way or the other, you wouldn't just have to look at the smoke from the Ma'arocha. You could look at any column of smoke. But they mentioned this one in particular, first of all, because there was a lot of it, and second of all, because other smoke, again, would disperse. You have a column, you have smoke, comes from any other kind of fire, it'll go in all different directions, so it's going to be hard to tell which way it's going, as opposed to here, where it's going up straight like a column, like a tree, then it's easy to see which way it's leaning. So Rav Abba had said to when we said before that Achitofel had told his children that when the weather is clear on Shavuos, then you should be planting wheat. So Rav Abba is saying that actually we in Eretz Yisrael learn that it's not really that it depends on Shavuos; it's rather it depends what the weather is like at the end of Sukkot on Shmini Atzeres. Well, the Gemara says a Ramini, though I have a contradiction to what Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi is saying. He's saying, in short, that the east wind is very bad, the west wind is very good, and the north and south winds, they have their good and not so good qualities. But the Gemara says, Abraisa says as follows, Mizrachis la'olam yafa, on the contrary, the east wind is always good, Ma'arovis la'olam kosher. The west wind is always a harsh wind. Is always a harsh wind that's not good for that's not good for the climate. Ruach tzfonis yofa lachitim b'shashay v'yushlish. A north wind is good
for the wheat that's growing in the field when it's reached one third of its growth, where at that point it doesn't need so much rain anymore. We did say that the north wind clears the clouds and means there's going to be less rain, but fine, once the grain has grown to one third of its growth, generally it doesn't need as much rain anymore. The koshalization, the shashi and nitsu, on the other hand, that north wind is bad for the olives when they're blossoming, where they still need a lot of rain. The ruach jeroimis and the south wind is the other way around. Koshal achitin, the shashi v'yushlish. It's bad for the wheat when it's already one third grown. Because again, then you're gonna have a lot of rain that's gonna damage them. The yafalization, the shashi and nitsu, on the other hand, it's good for olives when they're blossoming because they need a lot of rain. So any of these three Amoraim said, the Simonach, a way to remember, you're saying the north wind versus the south wind, as far as wheat and as far as olives, how to remember which is which. Shulchan Betzafon, the Shulchan in the Bismithash was located on the north side of the Heichel, or Menorah Badorim, and the Menorah was, which was lit with olive, the Shulchan had the Lachem upon it, made out of wheat, was on the north. Menorah, and the Menorah, which was lit with olive oil, is Badorim, is on the south. Hai Merabi Didei, Vahai Merabi Didei. So each kind of wind causes the thing that's on its side of the Mishkan and the Beis Mikdash to grow. So therefore, the north wind was saying, which is good for wheat, because on the north side of the Heichel is where you have the Shulchan with the Lachem Aponim made out of wheat. And similarly, the south wind is good for olives, from which you make oil, which the Menorah is lit with. Anyway, the point is, though, that the Braise is saying just the opposite of Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi. He was saying that the west wind is good, and everybody is happy when they see that the next year there's going to be a lot of west winds, and the east wind is bad, and everybody is sad about it. Here, the Braise is saying the other way around. An east wind is good, and a west wind is bad. The answer is, the Gemara says, L'kasha ho'lon v'ho'lahu. There's a difference between us, meaning in Bavel, because after all, the Gemara was written in Bavel, versus them in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, in other words, Bavel is a very low-lying country. So therefore, then it has rivers and canals and whatnot, so they don't need as much rain in the first place. So a west wind that brings a lot of rain is not good for them. It oversaturates the ground, and therefore and it causes floods and other problems like that. An east wind in Bavel is good for them. So the Braisa that says that a west wind is bad and an east wind is good is talking about in Bavel. For Holohu, whereas Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avdimi is talking about for them, meaning in Eretz Yisrael being a hilly country, they need a lot of rain, because otherwise the rain runs off the higher elevations very quickly. So they need a lot of rain. So for them, it's the other way around. A west wind that brings a lot of rain is good for them. An east wind that makes that there's less rain is not so good for them. That's according to the Rashbam. Again, Tosfos points out that there's a Gemara earlier in our Masechta that implies that the east wind actually does bring a lot of rain. But the difference is that in Eretz Yisrael it's good to have a lot of rain, again, because it's hilly, whereas in Bavel, where the ground is very moist anyway, then it's not so good. The Gemara continues on this subject. Tanya Abba Sholomer, Yom Tov Shalatzeres Borer, when Yom Tov of Shavuos is clear weather, Simen Yofa L'Cholashana Kula, then it's a good Simen for the entire year. So again, this fits with what Marashah was saying before, that since Shavuos is the day of Kabbalah HaTorah, as the day we recommit ourselves to the Torah, so when you have clear weather on it, then it means that it means you're going to be able to focus better on your learning, and therefore it's a good Simen for the entire year. Based on the explanation in the Rebbe's letter, it would be also that Rav Zvid is saying when you have clear weather showing that you can clearly see the Kishem Shemogin Avaya Elakim, you clearly see other course in the world on Shavuos, so then it means it's a good simon for the entire year. So that's Abishol actually. Amr of Zvid says further on this about a simon for the rest of the year. Amr of Zvid, Hai Yoyma Kama de Rei Shata, the first day of the year, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, I chomim, if it's hot weather, kula shata chamima, then it means that most of the coming year is going to be hot. The I korer, if it's cold weather, kula shata krira, then most of the year is going to be cold weather. On the face of it, of course, we're talking about whether it's also brought in various places that it's talking about a person's avoda. If a person's avoda on Rosh Hashanah is going to be with a warmth and a higher sense, then it means that the rest of the year he'll be able to keep that up. But if Chas V'Shalom the opposite, then that can be a problem. So the Gemara says, what's the relevance of that, so what the weather is on Rosh Hashanah, and how it affects the rest of the year? The answer is, L'tfilos Yishol Kohen Gadol. As far as the Kohen Gadol's tefillah, 9 days later on Yom Kippur, he's going, and after he does the Avodah and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so we learn in Masechta Yoma, we say in the Seder HaAvodah, that he says a short tefillah over there in the Heichal, and part of his tefillah is he says, Im Shchuna Gishuma, that if this year is going to be hot, that there should be a lot of rain, so now, based on how the weather was on Rosh Hashanah, then he'll know how to adjust his tefillah appropriately. So depending what the weather was like on Rosh Hashanah is how he'll daven on Yom Kippur. Tosfos says a little bit differently. In other words, that he's saying that if it was hot on Rosh Hashanah, and therefore it's going to be hot during the rest of the year, then he davened it shouldn't be too hot. And if it was cold, that it shouldn't be too cold. Okay. So all of that was a digression because we were talking about the various psukim that indicate the concept of tzavah, and one of them was the pasuk with Achitofel, and that led us into this whole digression. So now getting back to Matnas Shchivmera. So the Gemara says, "V'Rava Amar Rav Nachman Matnas Shchivmera Midrabbanan Ba'almi." Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman that the whole concept that Matnas Shchivmera is valid without any kinyan, without any writing or anything, is Midrabbanan. So now, here is where we have, again, Tosfos had learned, since this is Rava in the name of Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman himself had brought on Amud Aleph, one of the psukim, from which we learn this concept, so Tosfos says, even Rav Nachman never meant that it means Zaraisa, it just means that it's Dirabbanon, and he was looking for the posik that's an Asmachta for it. On the other hand, as we talked about, Marusha says that since the Gemara says Rava Omar Rav Nachman, usually in the Gemara when you have Omar Reb Pliny, then it means he's saying something new. But when you have Reb Pliny Omar, then usually it means he's arguing. So therefore, some Marusha learns like that it means that Rava is arguing with what we said before, that before we had Rav Nachman himself had said. The Gemara had quoted Rav Nachman to be saying a posik implying that's daraisa, but now Rava is explaining that no, that's not what Rava meant. That's not what Rav Nachman meant. He actually meant that it's only midrabbanan. Anyway, we're saying that's only the concept that's valid without anything further. It was only midrabbanan. Shemet toref daite olav, because otherwise. Otherwise the shchivmera's mind is going to be confused because of its tsar. So what does that mean? First, the Rashbam says what it means is if you have to wait until Edim come and they do a kinyan or whatever, meanwhile he might lose his mind and then he's not going to be able to do his tzavah. So that's Rashbam's first explanation, but he says that doesn't really work. So what? Okay, if the whole point is, if they didn't make the takana of a matnas shchivmera, then that's exactly what would happen. Fine, if we didn't have Edim around, he wouldn't give his tzavah, and that would be that. Why are we saying that we have to make it that his tzavah should be valid before even Edim come? Rather, Rashbam says the point is because we don't want the guy's going to be worried. Look at this. I'm about to die, and here what I want to get accomplished is not going to get done. He's going to have such tsar that therefore it's going to cause him to become deranged. So out of concern for him, then the Chachamim made the takana that whatever he says will be valid. So like this, when he knows that he can say something and it's going to be fulfilled without a kinyan, without anything, then he'll feel much more at ease. So the Gemara says, "Mi Amar Rav Nachman Hachi." Did Rav Nachman really say that a matnas shchivmera is only dirabbanan? Va Amar Rav Nachman, didn't Rav Nachman himself also say, "Afal gav de Amar Shmuel hamoichu shalchoy v'chaveiroi v'chozer u'mochle mochul"? Even though Shmuel had said a din that if a person sells a shtar choyv to somebody else and then he's moichel it, then it is a valid mechila. We touched on this the other day that Reuven has a shtar choyv where it says that Shimon owes him money. So he now, Reuven goes and sells that shtar choyv to Levi. So on the face of it, now it means that Levi can collect that debt from Shimon. But Nevertheless, Reuben would afterwards have the ability to be moichel on that shtar, and therefore Levi doesn't have to pay Shimon anything. Doesn't have to pay Shimon anything, because the reason is, that Rashbam explains, the logic behind it is, when Reuben sells it to Levi, he's selling kol zchus shetava liyadei. Any rights that he has, he's selling to Levi. So, since Reuben himself could have been moichel Shimon the debt, then therefore Reuben has the ability to be moichel it even after he sold it to Levi. Now, the Rashbam also says that Reuben in that case would have to reimburse Levi, because after all, this is dina de garmi. He caused fairly directly that Levi lost money. It's no different, the Rashbam says, than if he had burnt the shtar, where he would have to pay him. Tosfos actually has a long discussion of that over here, and says maybe not necessarily, would he have to pay him for the entire value of the shtar. Maybe at most he only has to pay him for the amount of money that he paid for the shtar. He didn't necessarily pay full value for it, as usual, even nowadays, when people trade in IOUs and things like that. They don't always pay full price for them, because it depends. You look at what the guy's credit rating is, how likely is he to pay back. So therefore, Tosfos learns that at most he would have to pay him only the amount he paid for the shtar, which is not necessarily the full face value of the shtar. But then Tosfos goes on and discusses in some detail about all of this, whether in fact he would have to pay, rules of dina de garmi and groma and so on and so forth. So anyway, the point is, so Rav Nachman says like this. So Shmuel had said that kind of thing does work, and furthermore, Vafilu Yodosh Moichel, in fact, not only Reuben himself, who originally had the shtar, can be Moichel, but even if Reuben died, his Yoshim can also be Moichel, the shtar that their father Reuben had sold to Levi. Nevertheless, Rav Nachman continues, Moide Shmuel, Sheim Nosnim, and Matnas Shchivmana, Shmuel would agree that if the Malva had given the shtar as a matnas shchivrina, so Reuben was a shchivrina, and he gave the shtar to Levi, that the Yodosh is not afterwards going to be able to, that afterwards the Yodosh is not going to be able to be moichlet. In other words, we're saying that it's even stronger. So here we're talking about it was a matnas shchivrina. And again, the Rashbam points out you have two ways. Either he gave all his nechassim and no kinyan is necessary, or he gave some of his nechassim and a kinyan was done. Or the Rashbam points out also you could also have, since he gave it to him while he was alive, that itself amounts to a kinyan. Whatever the case, the point is we're saying that that's so strong that the Yodosh is not able to be moichel. So, Iyamet b'shlema d'araisa, if you tell me that the concept of matnas shchivrina is d'araisa, mishum hochi eni yochel limchel, that would explain why the Yodosh is not able to be moichel on that shtar. Because he had completely given it away in a way that's valid api Torah, and now, therefore, the Yodosh doesn't have any ability to be moichel it anymore. Eli Yamet d'rabbanon, but if you tell me the whole concept of matnas shchivrina is only d'rabbanon, then amai eni yochel limchel, why shouldn't the Yodosh be able to be moichel? Why should we say that matana is so strong, has such strength that even the Yodosh can't even be moichelit? Now, within that itself, by the way, you also have a big discussion of Rishonim, whether this concept of selling a shtar and having that now the other person is able to collect on it, is that concept itself d'araisa or d'rabbanan? So Tosfos over here refers to something that they explained Udi in the Masechta, where they had a long discussion about it. Rabbeinu Tam had actually learned that selling shtaris is actually valid on a d'oraisa level. So therefore the Gemara is asking now. So now if the matnas shchivrina itself is d'oraisa, then you understand how that causes that even though he sold the shtar on a d'oraisa level, nevertheless, usually he would have been able to be moichel it. But because we have another din d'oraisa of matnas shchivrina, then that prevents the Yodosh from being moichel. But if you tell me the whole concept of matnas shchivrina as d'rabbanon, how can a d'rabbanon override something d'oraisa? Then you have other Rishonim who disagree with Tosfos on that, and they learn that the sale of shtaris is itself valid only d'rabbanan, and then that would be a different way then of understanding what the Gemara's question is. that if matnas shchivin al daraisa, then you understand that prevents a sale which is only valid derabanan from taking effect. The sale is valid and the yerush can't be mechala. But if you tell me that all of this is derabanan, then how does that work? And the Gemara answers, Eina shel Torah v'asa orcha shel Torah. The answer is true. Rav Nachman would say that a matnas shchid mara is only dirabanan. But we would say that the Chachamim made it strong like a din of Torah, because again, we have Rachmanus on the shchid mara, shaloi ti torah daito, so he doesn't get so agitated over the point that he's going to think that his instructions are not going to be carried out, and therefore, so the Chachamim made it so strong that if he gives the shtar as a matnas shimra, that his yodish is not going to be able to be moichalit. So whether we say that the sale of shoris is valid minat Torah or not, either way, we can say that usually, yes, you'd be able after you sell a shtar to be moichalit, but here, for the sake of the shimra, then the Chachamim made that you can't do that, the Yerush will not be able to be moichel on that shtar. So then the point is, though, we can still say that Rav Nachman says that the whole concept of matnas shchivmana is drabbanon. So again, does that mean that's definitely what Rav Nachman holds? So according to Tosfos, yes. According to Tosfos, all along the Gemara knows that Rav Nachman holds that the concept is only drabbanon. The Gemara had asked the question, but it immediately answers. And according to Marashah's understanding, the Gemara is saying, within Rav Nachman's opinion itself, there are two possibilities. I know with Aleph, we had brought something, where Rav Nachman had brought a posuk for matnas shchivmana, implying that it's daraisa. Now, Rava is saying, I disagree with that, and say that it's only derabanan, and then the question and answer over here was according to Rava's shita. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we're going to talk about more of these dinim of matnas shchivmana, which are going to extend over the next few blocks.